Get outside of your own department. That's the biggest thing is you know the way you do things in-house, right? Get outside and learn from other people. There's so much information out there. There's so many different ways to do things. And you don't want to be just siloed. You're going your own direction. Don't be afraid to challenge. If something's better, then bring it back. Bring back pieces of things. You know, you don't have to. It's not just, oh, this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we're going to do it. Well, if that ain't working, like let's try, you know, and that's what, like you said earlier too, and I agree wholeheartedly. You might go to a class and only pick up one thing. You know, you might go to a week-long class, pick up one little thing that we can bring back to the department to make it better. Well, then the class was worth it to me. You know, like you might
Absolutely.
have just changed the entire way that we do business in some facet because, and that doesn't have to be just hands-on stuff. That could be leadership stuff. That could be the guys getting out and learning from other leaders, not just, you know, their way of doing things.
Being rescued from a three-story apartment building.
What's your emergency?
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Join us as we explore leadership from perspectives around the globe, from firefighters to fire chiefs, civilians to CEOs. Our conversations have one simple goal: build more leaders.
Good afternoon. Today we are in Cocoa Beach, Florida, as we have a Deputy Chief Stephen Lee on the show. Our leadership conversation today is regarding empowerment as well as perspective. Thanks for tuning in today to episode 70 of The Kitchen Table. Chief Steve Lee is the Deputy Chief of Operations of Cocoa Beach Fire Department in Florida. He started his career in the fire service just after high school. He got his EMT and fire certifications at Eastern Florida State College. He went to work for Brevard County Fire and Rescue in January of 2004. He worked as a firefighter EMT on multiple fire engines and got his paramedic certification before being hired in Cocoa Beach in 2008. Chief Lee has earned multiple life-saving awards while working his way up through the ranks of firefighter paramedic, lieutenant, district chief, and now recently promoted to the chief of operations. Chief Lee holds multiple degrees in fire science, as well as a BA in public administration. Chief Lee is trained as a fire instructor, inspector, investigator, as well as works at the State Academy on his days off. Steve's been married for 18 years to his wife, Jen. They have two boys, Killian and Jameson. They are a very active family and spends lots of time at the baseball fields, football fields, fishing, camping, and at the beach surfing and paddleboarding. Good afternoon, Chief. Thanks for being a guest today. How are you?
I'm doing great. That guy sounds really important.
That guy does sound important, and that's why we're here.
No, I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here, man.
Thank you. I joked the other day, we had an individual on the show. He's from Gig Harbor, and Gig Harbor is just south of Seattle. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're the third guest now from Gig Harbor Fire Department. And they're like a small, medium-sized fire department. And I was like, man, you guys produce some great leaders. And then I was, you know, going over our stuff today before recording. I'm like, this is like the fifth or sixth person from Florida. So this is pretty cool because, you know, Florida is obviously producing this, this, you know, massive amount of phenomenal fire service leaders because Florida, Florida, Florida. So this is awesome. I'm excited. So with that, you were the challengee of Michael DeStefano. Tell us your relationship there.
Well, I worked with Mike on and off over the years. We worked for Brevard County together. We went to paramedic school together and ran numerous calls together. Really good relationship. I've known him a long time, probably known him 15 plus years. Great guy. We're super excited to see what he does with Jupiter Fire Department.
Absolutely.
Just stoked all around. I'm happy that he recommended me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I am very excited to talk empowerment. But before we go to that leadership conversation, would you mind sharing a little bit about who Chief Steve Lee is before we go?
Yeah, so me, I've been Brevard County, lifelong resident, born here, raised here. I went to high school here, you know, played sports growing up, you know, graduated high school as a young kid. Like a lot of people in our profession, I didn't have a lot of drive or, you know, direction, I should say, towards where I want to go in college. I floundered a little bit, you know, a couple years of community college and wasn't making all the best decisions. And at one point, my dad sat me down and he, you know, one of the best things that ever happened to me. All right, well, you know, you got a couple options. Like, you can go to the fire academy, which I had a cousin that was FDNY at the time, become a policeman, or go in the military, or essentially you can get out of my house. Like, it was one of those deals, right?
Yeah.
So I was a young kid, didn't know much of nothing, and I chose fire school. And from the first day I walked into fire school, just fell in love with it. Fell in love with the job, and I was all in. I finally found what I really wanted to do with my life. And just never look back.
I actually had to ask Chief DeStefano when he, you know, said you got to reach out to Chief Lee out there at Cocoa Beach. I'm like, where's Cocoa Beach? So where's Cocoa Beach, if I can ask?
We're on the East Coast. We're directly east of Orlando.
Oh, east of Orlando. Got it.
Just south of the Space Center. They launched the rockets. We run AutoAid with Cape Canaveral, where, you know, it's, I think, the second biggest cruise port in the world now.
Oh, got it.
We have, you know, 2.5 million visitors here every single year. The Cocoa Beach in and of itself is like only 11,000 residents, 11,300 or something. But we have 2.5 million people here every year. So every day, I mean, the call volume could be.
How big is Cocoa Beach Fire? Is it Cocoa Beach Fire Department? Cocoa Beach Fire and
Cocoa
Rescue?
Beach Fire Department. Yep. Cocoa Beach Fire Department. So we have 33 uniformed personnel as far as truck. We have two stations, two engines, a truck, quad, which is, we call it a squad, but it's more of a high water vehicle. It's also, you know, it has confined space and rope stuff on it, and a district.
Now I know a little more about Cocoa Beach. Another phenomenal town, as I can imagine, out there in Florida. All right. Well, today's talking point and theme that we're going to talk about, which I'm super excited. We're talking empowerment and we're talking perspective. So from Chief Lee's point of view, regarding anything we could have talked about today regarding leadership and what resonated with you, talk about the importance of or why it's empowerment that came to your mind and stuff that you wanted to talk about today.
Well, to be honest, I think so. Empowerment, I would say, is the most common leadership trait that I have. I do believe that all of us have to be situational leaders as well, right? I mean, there are times when you're on a fire scene that you're not going to be able to, you know, if you're running command and you got fire blowing through the roof and, you know, you're telling your inside crews to get out and they want to keep making a push, you can't, you know, take a, it's like, no, you know, you need to make that change. It's a change in strategy, exit the building. There's times where you got to be direct and there's other times where, but I would say more often than not, I do use that empowering leadership. And I feel like that's what resonated the most with me, because those are the guys that I had the most respect for coming up. The ones that gave me rope, that allowed me to flourish. They're not standing over your shoulder. Everybody has good ideas. You know, and this idea that like the two or three or four people at the top of your organization should be making every single decision and they're the only ones that can have ideas is just not the way to progress. It's not the way to grow, in my opinion. You know, some of the best ideas I've ever heard have come from brand new firefighters.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that was the way we changed this place. We changed the entire culture of this department, you know, in the last 15 plus years. And a lot of that was from the bottom, and our chiefs allowed us, we designed the trucks, we participate in the hiring process, we participated in building our station. You know, there's buy-in, there's pride, there's ownership. So I think we've just, that's just the culture that we built.
That's interesting. You said change the culture from and empowering those from even the ground level, whether it be a probationary firefighter or the, you know, new. I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are trying to, you know, say become integrated or be involved with things like you said, the hiring process and other, but you're talking about as far as even like building stations and things like that. How many times have we built a station where it's like, I cannot believe they put that there. And actually it was Chief, it was actually Chief Shaw, which I'm sure, you know, Steve Shaw. Steve Shaw was actually he's one who challenged Chief DeStefano, but you know, over there in Jupiter, they were talking about like, you know, the contractors and the individuals, you know, in charge of building that fire station. They're like, you know, we're building this community area, or you have, you know, this amount of firefighters, we only need like 6 parking spots. And then they were talking about like, well, no, you need like 15. They're like, well, why you need 15? It's only this many people here. Well, because you got shift change, you have this. And they're like, the people that are not involved, or sorry, excuse me, those that aren't the firefighters, they don't know the dynamic or the culture, we'll say. And so by involving, my point is by involving and encouraging those people to be involved in that process, that's where empowerment comes in. And you, like you said, I love how you said it. Like, there's so many great ideas that come from everywhere. Something that I've always said too is like the recruit academy, like new recruits is like, who are the best people to know about recruits? The recruits are the experts at being recruits, right? I was an expert at being a recruit when I got hired 18 years, 17 years ago. I'm no longer an expert at being a recruit today. So empowering and understanding and meeting the people that we're hiring today and being involved is key. So I love how you said empowering leadership. Do you believe that empowerment was something that was ingrained or helped you get to where you're at?
It was, you know, I think early on we had a lot of good leadership, different than us. You know, I learned a lot of stuff from, I was lucky enough to have a lot of good officers. And then I had a lot of, you know, you learn what not to do from some people.
Absolutely.
But I absolutely, yeah, they gave us so much leeway just to change the place. I mean, to run training and do all this stuff. They're like, I want to make sure I pass that on to everybody else and give them the opportunity, because now that I'm up here where I'm at, there's no way I can stay up with, you know, the latest and greatest rope stuff and nozzle stuff and truck, you know what I mean? Like they're on it every day. It's their stations, their trucks. And my job is to give them what they need to be successful, right? To run the calls.
How did that change? Like you're saying that now there's so much leeway, we'll say. I would assume at some point in time years ago, there was less of a leeway, we'll say. And then there was that culture shift. Was it like a culture shift, new administration? What led to the, now we get a lot of leeway, now we're being empowered, and then it led to that culture change. Like, how did that take place?
I feel like our culture change kind of started from the bottom, you know, and it's a long story. But when we got here, I remember it was me and about four other individuals, and most of them are chiefs now. One of them is our chief that just retired. Great guy. We're all at a conference together. We used to joke, like, hey, man, one day we're going to have our own department, you know, and it was, and nope. Here we all are now, you know, but I remember being there and we took advantage. They had the stuff at their disposal, but some of the people weren't using it, if that makes sense. So anytime, like when I got here, I'm like, wait a minute, you mean education policy, for example, like you're giving me a car, you're paying for my school, you're giving me a place to stay, you're giving me time off of work. And not everybody's taking advantage of this. You know, it was one of those deals where, so we went out and got as educated as we could. And then we would bring it back and they would empower us to teach the guys what we learned. And that's one of the biggest things to me is the inbreeding, right? And like, yes, if you're just constantly doing the same thing over and over and over and over, and you're never asking questions, and you're never trying to better, you're never trying to learn anything from outside, then you're never going to progress.
There's a problem there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I, not to go off on a tangent, but like, I remember coming in and there was an off going driver one time, or I was going off and the driver were leaving me, came, started screaming at me. And I'm like, what's going on? Had something to do with the way I rolled the pony section of hose or whatever. And I'm like, sorry, man, I'll roll it your way next time. But do you have, just out of curiosity, you know, because I was curious, you know, like, absolutely, why do you do it that way? Well, that's the way we've always done it. You know, and I know you've heard that a million times, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the way we do it. That's the way we... and, you know, again, I was younger. Like, I'm like, you want to go outside and I'll do it my way. You do it your way. We'll see who's faster. Like, we can, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to do, like, but they don't want no part of it. It was like very much, this is the way it is. So I think we kind of had to change some of that from the bottom.
Okay.
They did empower us to take classes and come back and train and stuff. But a lot of that is just, I realize there's no way for me to know everything as well. Right.
Of course.
And I need to teach or to let those guys go out and learn and bring it back, because.
Yeah. The question I have on that is, I'm trying to understand a little bit about, you said we were empowered when we got here. Help me understand that dynamic about like, was there a big change when you were coming into the Cocoa Beach Fire Department? Like, or, what was that like?
I would say there was a bit of a culture change, right? Okay. But there was a bunch of us that were driven and we wanted to learn. And it just, it's a completely different place. You know, anybody that knows this place would tell you it's a very different looking department today than it was then.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form trying to, you know, about it. It's just different times, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, it was just a group of us that came in and we were really passionate about training and passionate about being the best that we could. And like I said, we took it as, you know.
I love that because it was Chief DeStefano that actually talked about this is like, you got to get outside and learn what's out there outside of your own department, right? If you just learn only your way of doing things and you always believe that your way is the only way and the best way, that's a problem because there's other innovations that are happening out there. You got to go out and take classes. And then you took it a step further, or you're talking about this. And the next step is when you're supported to go take outside classes, go to the FDIC, go to these conferences, go to these classes and bring it back. It's not that you have to implement everything, but you start those conversations about, hey, these departments are doing it like this. Maybe this is something we should look at, talk about. And if not, great. But at least you're empowering your individuals to go get knowledge, we'll say, and then come back and foster that conversation about, you know, what do you think about maybe, you know, bringing this to the table now, right? That's what innovation is. But you're totally right in the sense that, you know, from the ground up, the boots on the ground were the ones that were leading that change, if you will. Obviously not easy, right? But you had motivated individuals. Can a bigger department do that in the sense that, you know, extreme ownership, right? Everyone's responsible for their own part of their development on how they carry themselves, morale, right? People talk about, you know, morale, you know, the chief's got to take care of morale. Well, every individual has to take care of morale, you know, wherever they're at in their station and their, you know, daily routines, X, Y, Z. But so how do you do that? How do you get the mass numbers at the bottom, the ground, the boots on the ground level to say, let's be a part of this culture change and let's go. Cause it's hard, right?
It's really hard. And I think honestly, it has to do with hiring. We always say here, you know, hiring and promoting the right people. And then you got to foster that, right? You have to give those people, because if you hire and promote the right people, you're going to hire the go-getters. You're going to hire the people that everybody wants to hire. And then you got to feed them. Right. Mm-hmm. You got to get them the training. You got to get them the equipment that they want. And you have to keep them fed, essentially. Yeah, right. Because they want to go. And it everybody blames the pay and the, but it is culture. It really is.
Yes.
You know,
how does Cocoa Beach, I ask this often too, so it's not that I'm picking on your department, but I'm just wondering how Cocoa Beach does. You see, I mean, we hear this a lot. We pick the right people, we promote the right people, and right is can be as subjective as they want, or as, you know, as specific as they want for their fire department. But there's an element of us being the fire department, providing, you said feeding mm-hmm. them the information, the training, the support, the pay, all the above. So they want to stay there, so they want to be there, and they want to progress. And so you have your own leaders coming up through the ranks in the organization. So what does Cocoa Beach do, out of curiosity, to feed them, right? How do you feed your up-and-coming promotion individuals that want to move up, right? Because there's some people that just don't want to move up, and that's not, there's not wrong with that. But to an extent, there is a little bit wrong with that too, because you do want your people to succeed and progress.
So we are big on education here.
Okay.
Yeah, first and foremost. And, you know, I mean, we don't run a ton of fire. Water rescue is kind of one of our bread and butter type deals. We have water rescue technicians. We're one of the only USLA certified full-time, our fire departments without a full-time lifeguard or, you know what I mean? Like we train people, we teach people. These guys are hungry and they want to take classes, and our education policy is amazing.
Like, what do you encourage to do, or requirements to promote? Like, is it extensive to the point? Because I always think of it like this. Everything is outrageous if it's new. Like, right, if you have, like, no educational requirements to promote, and it's been that way for 50 years since you've started the fire department, then all of a sudden you need three classes. Oh, my gosh, we need to take three classes. This is absurd. And it's like, it's always because it's new, right? And so what are the educational requirements? Is it a degree? Is it a certain amount of, like, you know, strategy and tactics courses? What does that look like?
So it depends on the position, right? Oh, but when our guys come in the door immediately after probation, it's, you know, pump operator and, you know, hydraulics and all that kind of stuff. Start getting ready for driver stuff, ropes, VMR, most of our guys, and done, like out of the 33 people here, most of them are teched out or almost all teched out. Not all the tech stuff. A lot of them are water rescue technicians, which is not easy. You know, sure. we have swift water and flood water stuff and capabilities. What I love about this place too, and again, talk about empowering people, is that we have people that are really passionate about EMS, right?
Yep.
And so we give them a lot of that stuff and they run with that. And we have people that are passionate about ropes. We have people that are passionate about, you know, pumping. And they're kind of our SMEs with this stuff. And we're so small, we can't do a lot of the stuff ourselves. So what we've done is we've kind of created a job list. And if your passion is, let's say, you know, small tools or whatever, saws, then this is your budget for the year. You tell me what we need. Go out and do some research. Come back to me. Let's sit down and talk about it. You know, so again, talk about empowering people. I feel like that empowers them to make decisions. And it's, again, it's pride and ownership. Stuff they want to do. I mean, I could go on on and on and on. But when it comes to promoting, you need a degree. But long before that, most of our guys have degrees. It's not like they're getting a degree just to promote. You know, we take so many classes. It's just
because what always, you know, it's just my own personal thought. Like for example, our department or departments will provide an allowance, we'll say $2,000 a year, $1,000 a year to take courses. And I don't understand why. It's like you're allotted this much money to use to get a higher education, to go to courses, but you're telling me you haven't gone to any courses at all in the last 3 years? Like, can I borrow your money and can I, you know, double down and take, you know, twice as many? So, I mean, that's cool that it's just, it's a culture in your department that people will just naturally utilize the allotment, we'll say, to go take and, you know, better themselves, right? Curiosity was something that you also talked about, right? So how important is curiosity, say, in leadership?
I think it's extremely important, because if you're not curious and you're not continuing to foster that and learn from things, you know, you become closed-minded, you become closed off, and you're never self-reflecting, right? You're never looking back. I don't know how you progress without those things. Mm-hmm. You know,
when you got promoted to the deputy chief, you said you sat down with every single individual in your department.
I did.
Talk about that.
It was something I thought about before I went in there, because, you know, when you're down, when you're in the field, you're always complaining. Those guys, you know, they
us? No, what?
Yeah. I never, and even to this end, I love my wife still keeps me honest with that stuff. She's still like, she's amazing. She's everything. And she still gets on. She's like, hey, you've gone downstairs and talked to the guys recently? You know what I mean? Because there were times where I would be like, hey, those guys are just out of touch, you know, or they're just this or that. And she'll tell me, hey, you need to go down there. You need to spend a little more time. You need to, you know, it was important to me, and I'm really, really glad I did it. It took a few weeks, you know, getting people in and out and stuff like that. And so what my plan was and what I did, and I don't even know where I came up with this. I just came up with it, was to sit down with every single person. I had the same list of questions for every person. You know, some of the meetings last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Some of them lasted an hour. You know, some people were willing to talk. But I knew, because I was a battalion on C shift, I knew what our issues were, what we were good at, what we weren't, what I thought the issues were on the other shifts, what they were good at. But I just want to get a consensus. Like, what do we need to work on? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, what are we? So my questions were things like, what are we doing well? What do we need to work on departmentally? Are your officers giving you everything you need to promote to the next level? Are you interested in promoting to the next level? Are your officers, you know, fostering that? There was, you know, just the same group of questions for everybody. And my plan, what I did was to start with the probies, newer people. Of course, the probies, everything's wonderful. They're just happy to have a job. No, you know, those meetings last 30 seconds. But the people that know you more open up a little more. I'm glad I did it, because I would say 95% of it or more was stuff that I knew. Obviously, because I just came from there. Like, I felt like each person gave me one little extra piece of information that I didn't know, you know, that I wrote down. And it got it was funny because it was so universal. The answers were so much the same that I would start smiling. They're like, "You've heard this before, haven't you?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I've heard it." You know, so there were certain things, and I knew like if 33 people come in here and tell me this is an issue, or you know, this is good, this is bad, then obviously we need to work on it, right? So it was amazing. I'm really really happy I did it, and I think that they were very receptive. And they were happy to be talking.
That's awesome.
And feel heard, especially, you know, some of the lower ranks. Like I said, in the notes, I started low and I worked my way up because by the time I sat down with the battalion chiefs, I knew what our issues were, right? I had a list drawn out. Like, I know this is, all right, so if 30 or, you know, 25 of 30 people have told me that this is a problem, then this is a problem, right?
Yep.
We need to fix this. Yep. So in their expectations at the very beginning, it's, you know, let's get these things straightened out. This is what we're doing well. Let's keep doing it, you know.
So there's this quote by Kirby Smart. You a big college football fan, Chief, being that you're from the South?
Oh, yeah. Kind of a little weird. My dad's from Austin. So, you know, it was the eyes of Texas and Longhorns from the time I was little. I really didn't have a choice. So I'm a Texas fan. But there are a lot of Gators here, a lot of Seminoles, a lot of Bulldogs fans.
Yeah. Awesome. So Kirby Smart, the Georgia Bulldogs head football coach, he talks about the cost of leadership and that great leaders must accept these costs. And what you said kind of reminded me of that. One of the costs of that the coach talks about is he says leaders at times will be, you know, misunderstood and won't always have the opportunity to, you know, defend themselves or explain things fully sometimes. And the reason what you said reminded me of what the coach was saying was simply because although you, as an ops chief, will say, or, you know, as a leader in general, you may make decisions that people, you know, don't like or don't necessarily agree with. But at least I'll say, if you yourself are making decisions that, you know, affect the, you know, the boots on the ground and the people don't like it or disagree with it, I would say at least you are, you know, meeting with your people, right? You're having those conversations, you're meeting with everyone, you know, and I think that's rare. I mean, I think. So a question that I have, Chief, is did you find yourself being able to, you know, deliver, you know, did you find yourself being able to meet the needs of people, you know, due to your ability to sit down with every single individual, having conversations, actually listening to the concerns with them, you know, taking into consideration that that's a cost of leadership is that you may not be able to deliver and you may not have the ability to defend yourself if you couldn't deliver on something, but you accepted that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, a lot of that stuff was stuff that I already knew was going on. I kind of had it drawn up already, like the way we were going to work on these things. I was definitely able to fulfill some of it. Some of it, once you realize that, like, the higher you promote, I feel like you realize you're dependent upon other things, external factors that sometimes, you know, and it gets frustrating that way. Because, you know, like, and I always tell people this, you know, before I promoted every single time, I always had a list going in my phone, or even before phones, of what I was going to do at the next level, right? So, like, it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to fix this. Like, and that was, like, the stuff that drove you crazy, right? Or the stuff that you saw that them doing good.
Yeah.
And now at this level, it's the first time I've been where, well, man, I don't think I could fix this, you know?
Yeah.
And, man, we're trying, and it might be a multi-year process, but we are fixing things. And that's been probably the biggest change for me.
Do you communicate that out of curiosity, right? Like when they become more complex, whether it be budgetary politics, you know, we can't necessarily get these things done as much as you would like to. Was that communicated to the crew so they can better understand the why things aren't getting done or why things are getting done? Like, were they communicated in your case? And how important is that communication from top down being transparent all the way across the board, always, not just sometimes?
I feel like it's paramount. Like, honestly, I probably communicate with them to a fault sometimes because communication, anybody that's ever worked on any of my shifts would tell you that that's one of my highest, most important things. You know, communication, whether it's on a fire ground, right? That's usually the biggest breakdown is communication in a marriage, anywhere. Like, communication is usually the first thing that creates the domino effect where everything starts going downhill. I communicate with all those guys and girls, and I still look through the notes and make sure I'm staying true to what I told them I was going to do. And I still sit down and talk. I mean, I've had a couple people in my office today talking, you know, and a lot of it has to do with side projects that they're working on or jobs, but I try to stay to still continue to communicate nonstop with all of them and make sure that they know, look, we're trying. You're heard and I understand your concern, but I want you to know here's what we're up against. Without going into too much detail, because there's a lot of
Absolutely.
stuff they just don't need to know, and you don't want to swamp them. They need to know that we're at least working on it.
Yeah, I mean sometimes understanding the why and why not, we'll say, is so key for the crew members because it's hard to meet everyone's expectations. Or the at least an explanation and the why not on an ongoing basis is obviously key. I wrote this down somewhere in some of the notes, and I wrote, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we'll go this route. You still look at your QA notes or Q&A notes. How important is that in a leader? Because there's obviously a lot of self-reflection there, right? I know later we're going to talk about never forgetting where you came from, never forgetting who you serve. But talk about that continuous reflection and still growing as a leader, even if you're in the operations chief role or even as you continue to grow in the ranks.
It's imperative that you learn from your experience, good or bad, right? If you're constantly reflecting, then that's the only way that you're going to get better and you're going to grow. There just is no other way. I'm not going to lie. There's times I look at that stuff and I'm like, oh, I still haven't done this, or maybe I screwed something up. Like I'll tell you an example. We did a realignment, shift realignment, a big one. And I told somebody that I thought I was going to be able to get them and on a different shift, and with all of the stuff that happened, man, there's a lot of moving parts, especially in small departments, tough, right? Because you need so many medics, you need so many write-up officers, you
Absolutely.
need so many drivers, I wasn't able to get that person where they needed to go. And so there's things where I say, I reflect and I want to make sure that I do right by this person because, they kept their head down. They didn't complain. But you know what I'm saying?
It's good to know that even, we say that firefighters, company officers, self-reflection is huge, but that even chief officers, executive chiefs, fire chief, they're reflecting too. Sometimes we don't get to necessarily hear that or see that or, but they are, right? Obviously they are.
All the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, all the time. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later, about continuing to grow and stuff like that. The next piece I do want to talk about is pivot. Like, right, there's sometimes in individuals' careers, there's multiple situations that kind of help propel your career. It could have been a promotion, maybe it was a failure that took place, assignment that you took that you can attribute to, that kind of got me to where I'm at today. And I will always remember that story or that event or that situation. So for Chief Lee, what was kind of a moment in your career where you credit your success and now you're the operations chief?
Yeah, so there's been a few of them. I had to think about it, but I truly think the biggest one that changed my career was before I even came to this department. It came on a call that we had many, many years ago. My old station, my old department, I was at my dream house, no thought of promoting, no thought of anything. We were busy. Good house. It's like my dream house, right? So, a good amount of fire, run extrications all the time, nasty stretch interstate. And I had a great lieutenant who I learned so much from that I still utilize half of the stuff that he taught me today. One night he's off and we have a brand new officer float in. I mean, brand new. And we get a call late at night, probably middle of the night sometime. It's like the call you get. They give you, it's a scenario they give you in school. You're like, oh, this is never gonna happen. The vehicle rollover, multiple ejections, the vehicle's on fire, it's in the woods. There's all kinds of stuff going on. So we pull up, minimal manpower, and due to the complexity of the situation, just a few other factors, I kind of found myself, I was running the scene. So the call goes, everything, we button everything up, put the hose up, patients are flown out, all that stuff. I'll never forget. We're in this awkward, quiet ride back to the station, and one of the guys in the back looks over at me, and he just goes, "Where are you going?" It's like, "So, where are you going?" And I just look at him like, "What the hell are you talking about? We're going back to the station. I'm going with you." Like, what, you know? And he's like, "Nah, man." He's like, "You don't belong on an ambulance." He's like, "You belong doing what you just did." And then it like just kind of clicked for me, and I'm like, man, he saw something in me, obviously, back then, there, like, the way that it worked, I just got my medic license and there wasn't, it was a bid system, but you would get shipped out to, I'd be on a transport unit for, and honestly, the way it was, I was looking probably 10 years on a transport unit is what I thought. I just wasn't, I was like, man, you know, I think you're right. You know, so it got me thinking a little bit, at least about it. And before that, there wasn't a whole lot of thought process. It was just like, man, I'm here. I'm loving life and things are good. And that was kind of got me thinking. And I had some buddies that had come here to Cocoa Beach and they had been reaching out to me, asking me to come over and see what they were all about. And so that's kind of what got me to come over here. And, you know, I met the chief, you know, sat down in his office, talked and saw what they're all about. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. I'm in. And I came over here and then, you know, the rest is history. I would say like that was probably the biggest pivot for me because, you know, leaving a department, it's a big decision.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I came over here and, you know, it was just a group of us and we all kind of clicked and it was good.
A question I have is how important is, not just is, and nor was that conversation riding back from that call from that firefighter partner that was in the rig with you to you know, say those words. And the reason I go with that is, you know, we always say words matter, right? Words matter. The overarching point of where I'm trying to get at is the importance of letting people know their potential, right? Like when you get back from a call, hey, nice work on that. Or even at the informal level inside the fire station, hey, have you ever thought about promoting? I think it's time for you to promote. Maybe you should start working on this, right? Because sometimes we're a little passive, we'll say. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's a mentors, a leaders. I'll say company officer, but we'll just say leader to leave rank out of it to help others reach their potential in any aspect that you can, right? Mentors should be developing those to help others reach their potential, right? Because how many times have we seen, we'll use the imposter syndrome for an example. Oh, you know, that company, that's not for me. You know, I just want to be a great firefighter. I've been thinking all of us have said that at one point, right? All of our company officers, training officers, chiefs, fire chief, at some point in our career just said, all I want to be is a firefighter, right? Okay, but now you're the fire chief. So the point is that the words matter. And so how important was that conversation that you had? Because now you're saying it's a pivot and now you're the operations chief in another fire department, not solely because of that one conversation, but that was part of it. Right. So
100%. Yeah.
So talk about that, those conversations, but then you as an individual taking that information and saying, you know what, going back to self-reflection, like, this is interesting that individual would have thought that, you know, pondering, it could be subconscious too. That now you're going, let me look into this now. So talk about that whole, about the importance of all that.
Yeah, get your mind working, right? Like, even if you're not thinking that way, exactly. Which a lot of us don't, right? You know, that it gets you thinking, man, maybe I am kind of good at this. And then somebody else tells you something, and then somebody else tells you something. I mean, I've used it. I've done the same thing so many times. You talk about people that don't want to promote. One of our lieutenants here now, I remember he's fire medic, great fire medic, seasoned, been around a long time. From Coney one time, and I said, hey, man, you know, you really, when I was a district, you really need to look at promote. You need to promote. You need to promote. Nope. Ain't going to happen. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to, I can't force you to do it, but I want this to be clear. I told him, I'm like, when somebody beneath you that you don't want to work for gets promoted over you, I don't want to hear your bitch and complain about it. Don't come to me. Right. Because I'm just going to say, I told you so. You should have done it yourself. And now that guy's a lieutenant. He listened to me, he tested, he did great. He's a great lieutenant.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes it's those things where you just got to tell people, hey, man, like, I understand. I do. But sometimes it's not just about what you want. And you got to think, you might not end up working for who you want to work for.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't step up, you're either going to be that person or you're going to be working for somebody else. So. Yeah. It's worked for me a few times. Like,
do you still do it today? Like, obviously this is probably still a recent example that you're talking about, but you being the operations chief, are you still having those conversations to your, even firefighters, right? But even lieutenants, captains, how much are you in their ear about succession plan? So it's ultimately where I'm going with it is succession mm-hmm. planning to make sure that, you know, Frank Lieb talked about this as having that deep bench, Frank Lieb with FDNY. And he's like always establishing that bench because someone might get injured or someone will retire, you might have mass exits, whatever. Do you have a bench already ready to come in because you've already planned for the future? You're not waiting for the future to be here to say we need people now. No, there's already people in the queue. You've prepared them. So are you still having those conversations as the operations chief and making sure, like, you know, hey, you, are you thinking about it? I know you've only got 5 years on the job, 8 years on the job, but have you thought about the next step?
Almost daily.
Daily.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
Tell me about it.
honestly, I truly feel, and this is not it, the next group is going to be better than us. This is these people, they're all stars. Like we have guys coming up now that are going to take our spots and keep taking the next level, the next level, and the next level. I couldn't be more proud
Wow.
of what we've done. Like we had training just, you know, the last 3 days we've been out of training. And I went out there, you know, one of the buildings in the city was nice enough to let us do some training. I was standing back. I told one of the other chiefs, I'm like, how cool is this? Like we're standing back watching the guys that we trained, train the newer guys, and they're doing better than we did. And then these guys are going to do better than them. And then like, that's the whole goal, right? Is that whoever takes our place is going to be better than us. If you're doing that, then you're doing something right. Right. I mean, that's if everybody, if whoever takes my spot behind me is better than me, then I feel like I've done my job. And I feel like I could leave tomorrow. Not that I want to, I love coming to work every day, but I feel like if I left tomorrow, somebody could take my spot and this place wouldn't miss a beat. It would just keep going and going and
There
going
you
and going,
go.
you know? So.
So the operations chief at Cocoa Beach still does it daily, making sure talking to people, right? Through conversations and through what other avenues? Like, what do those conversations sound like? I'm just curious. Like, what, like you're going out to talk to a recruiter today, whether it be battalion chief, officer, firefighter, like what does that sound like? Like, obviously there's
Well, a
just
lot of those,
inspirational moments in there, right?
yeah, a lot of those are one-on-ones, you know,
One
like,
on one's
hey, you
okay.
know, you ready to take my spot, you know, like it's that kind of stuff. Like, you know, what are you doing for classes and what, how's this going and how's that going? You know, and I talk to everybody. I try and talk to as many people as I can individually throughout the day. I don't bring a lot of that kind of stuff up in front of everybody, but I like to stay on that personal level with the guys as much as I can.
And so what you're saying is professional development and succession planning, you at the operations chief level, or we'll just use the executive chief level, isn't only the responsibility of, we'll say, the battalion chief and the company officers to talk to the firefighters, right? Like every level is responsible for having those conversations, to building that environment of, this is what we do around here at Cocoa Beach. At our organization, we have these conversations daily about preparing people, right? Like there's nothing wrong with an executive chief trying to motivate and inspire a firefighter, right? Yes, there's three levels in between the chief and the firefighter, but we're talking about simply, you know, empowering, going back to empowerment, empowering
Yeah.
people and motivating them to, you know, think about your future kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and I'm never going to be one of those people, man. I don't care what rank I am. I'm not a rank. I'm a person, and I will pull anybody aside. I don't care. Hey,
Awesome.
man, how's it going? How, like, I don't, I always despise all
Yeah,
that. Like people that feel like they're,
you're Steve
that's
talking
right.
to
I'm
a
Steve.
firefighter, and you're like trying to help them become the best that they can be.
Yeah. And if company officers, anybody, you want to know how you earn respect, even as a battalion, you get up, you're the first one to get up and do station duties. You're the one that's out there first at the rig. You know what I mean? It's so important to, again, it comes back to integrity and just doing what's right instead of what's comfortable. Some of these people get pretty comfortable in their roles and they feel like they're above certain things. You're never above it. You know, at the end of the day, we're all still firefighters and that's who I'm here for, right? And we always joke up here at our department. It's like if we disappeared to tomorrow, the fire department would still run, right? Like because you know we're here to run calls. Like they're still going to get on the trucks and run the calls. If they disappear tomorrow, then we're in a whole heap of trouble, right? You know, I mean, we can't function without them. That they are the lifeblood of this place. We our job is to give them what they need to run the calls.
So now that we've gone through empowerment, we've talked about curiosity, we've talked about perspective, we talked about succession planning. Let's talk to some firefighters, right? Let's say Steve Lee was going to the recruit academy or was talking to a probationary firefighter class, and you were giving a segment talking to new firefighters on being great leaders, right? Because leaders are at every level. What would you say in your discussion or speech to those firefighters regarding leadership and their journey starting this early?
Regarding leadership, I would say talk less and listen more. There is a lot of very opinionated people that, you know, if your mouth's open, then you're not hearing what's going on around you. Most people will tell you that when I was a battalion, when I was down there, I used to tell them, I used to sit at the end of the table and chew the end off my tongue all the time, because I would, you know, listen to conversations, but I knew what was going on. You know, you listen, and that's how you figure out what's going on. I also think that, speaking of newer leaders and newer, just newer generation, is that we're driven, right? We're very driven these days. It's great, right? We're pushing hard. But what I've seen is everyone seems to be so almost as if in a hurry, right, to get promoted. It's everybody's rush. You know, you got your whole career, you know, put your head down, keep working, keep taking classes, try to be the best at your rank, right? And that's what I try to push. It's like, you know, just try to be the best at whatever you're doing. And then all that the promotions and the respect and all that stuff you're looking for, that stuff will follow. Just put in the work. Mm-hmm. Keep your head down, put in the work, keep driving, do what's right, and all that stuff will work itself out. I always feel like everybody's in such a hurry nowadays, and I'm like, man,
we're gonna talk about that
one day.
It's true, you're gonna miss it one day. And we're the next piece here, where I know we're gonna talk about a little bit about Bill Walsh, because I know you just talked about, you know, put your head down, get the work, you know, put the work in, and the results will follow, more or less. So I'll hold the Bill Walsh comment, because I know you're going to mention it, because I love Bill Walsh. One of his books, in fact, is right behind me here. I know we're not doing video, but I'm going to reference it. So we'll get to that in a second. Regarding emerging leaders, right? We'll just say, it doesn't have to be a company officer. It doesn't have to be even a formal leader, you know, of a rank, but the emerging leaders are those that are taking a step toward those leadership roles. This being a podcast geared toward those leaders, right? The ones that are up and coming, the future, the people that are going to replace you and I. What would you tell those individuals regarding leadership and continuing to grow, specifically in the areas that we talked about today? What kind of advice would you provide?
A lot of what I said earlier, and that's just the way that we learned, was get outside of your own department. That's the biggest thing, is you know the way you do things in-house, right? Get outside and learn from other people. There's so much information out there. There's so many different ways to do things. And you don't want to be just siloed. You're going your own direction. And don't be afraid to challenge. If something's better, then bring it back. Bring back pieces of things. You know, you don't have to. It's not just, oh, this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we're going to do it. Well, if that ain't working, like, let's try, you know, and that's what, like you said earlier too, and I agree wholeheartedly, you might go to a class and only pick up one thing. You know, you might go to a week long class, pick up one little thing that we can bring back to the department to make it better. Well, then the class was worth it to me. You know, absolutely. You might've just changed the entire way that we do business in some facet, because that doesn't have to be just hands-on stuff. That could be leadership stuff. Yeah. That could be the guys getting out and learning from other leaders, not just, you know, their way of doing things.
At the end of the day, it's getting out and learning from outside and bringing it in. Again, it goes back to that empowerment, being empowered to bring something back, and, you know, the crew's being receptive to it. So going back to Bill Walsh, you had mentioned concentrate on what will produce results rather than concentrating on the results itself, right? And the book that I was talking about is The Score Will Take Care of Itself. But that's exactly kind of what you're talking about, right? Like, instead of focusing on that end journey, focusing on where you want to be, just focus on everything that it consists of. And then that promotion will happen, right? At some point as you're working on it, instead of focusing on the promotion, just focus on the progress toward it. Focus on your own competencies, focus on your leadership development. And so,
yeah, well, and you know, the thing about that is it's you have to be in the moment like that, but you also have to prepare yourself for the next job, right? Like,
yep.
You need to make sure, like, if you need to have that degree, you need to have that stuff. But there's just this, and like I said a little bit ago, it seems like everybody's kind of in a big hurry, instead of stopping to smell the roses, enjoying the rank they're in, being the best firefighter they could be. Everybody's looking at driver, looking at lieutenant, and it's like, that says it. I feel like that says it perfectly. You know, focus on the process.
Focus on the process. Well, speaking of books, this being a leadership-based podcast, there's lots of readings, articles, and in fact, I don't even want to limit it to a book. But one of your favorite readings, something that you'd recommend to our listeners, right? We talked about getting out of your, you know, department to go learn something. Sometimes we don't have to leave our department. Sometimes we get a click on Amazon and the book comes to us.
Ego is the enemy.
Ego is the enemy. Yeah. Talk about that real quick. Ego is not something any firefighters have, right? Let's be honest, right?
No, yeah. None of us have ego.
None of us have it, but still a good read. But talk about that and why that's important. Why is ego the enemy? Why is that important for fire service leaders?
I think a lot of us have seen a lot of that, right, in our time. Well, what I do like about the book is it uses a lot of examples, right? So, you know, they use examples of people who let their egos get the best of them, and it, you know, it didn't go well. But ego is so important, man. I think beating it comes with age sometimes, a lot of it, right? Like my wife says, you know, I didn't mature till 38. I'm just now hitting my stride. ego itself, I think the hardest part is just probably recognizing that you're even doing it.
Yep.
Right. And I think a lot of people don't even recognize they're doing it, which is a lot of the tough conversations and stuff we need to have as chief officers. He's like, Hey, you're doing it again. Right. Like, you know, if you're getting defensive and these things are going on, you need to start slowing down. Think about what you're saying. Right. You change the way you do business because you're letting your ego get the best of you. You know, you don't always have to be right. I think it's a really important piece of what a lot of us deal with. Like you said, not a lot of firefighters have ego issues.
No. We don't have that. We don't have that problem. Some industries have a lot more than us.
You know that?
Yeah. Can you talk about that aspect? You talk about having conversations, right? Conversations can be uncomfortable for some people. But the importance of having conversations, you said, like battalion chiefs, maybe a battalion chief to a crew member, a company officer. Because a lot of people in leadership roles, right, will say, would rather not have conflict, right? Would rather just ignore it, let it be, because, you know, having that conflict and those conversations is uncomfortable, we'll say. When we're talking about ego specifically, correct? Because we can talk about conversations and all kinds of conflict resolution, but that's a whole episode by itself. Got to have those conversations and you got to knock down that ego for us to become the best we can.
Well, they're never easy, right? Those conversations, nobody likes to have them. You know, you don't want to be the person that has to have them or the person that has to receive those. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be on either side of that. Probably, in my opinion, the least fun part of the job, you know, and especially in a small department. So with us, we're pretty close. I mean, our family, like, it's not like I got some guy transferring from, you know, across New York and, you know, I don't even know the guy. It's not fun, but if you're not having those conversations with people, you're doing them a disservice, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're letting it fester, you're letting it get worse. And then what happens, right? So their ego issues or whatever their issues are start to fester. And then it's cancerous, right? It spreads to other people. And then there's negativity. And then there's, like, it just snowballs, right?
Yeah.
It's imperative you jump on it early and you have the conversation with them when it's not a big deal. And most of the time, the answer is like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize I was doing it, Chief. Like, so yeah, it happens. It happens to all of us. We all start slipping a little bit. We start straying a little bit. Sometimes you just need a course correct and we're back on it.
Back on it. You know? Absolutely. So if you get ahead of it, what you're saying is having conversations early, no matter how difficult or uncomfortable it might be, we just have to know as leaders, if you wait, those conversations that are inevitable are just going to be that much harder.
Horrible. Yeah.
I mean, it goes without saying. I just wanted to highlight that. Yeah. No matter how uncomfortable it is now, just know it's not going to get any easier. You put it off. Good luck later, right? Good luck. Yeah. This being the kitchen table chief, things happen at the kitchen table, a lot of conversations, a lot of stories being told. Please share one of your fondest kitchen table memories in the firehouse.
Oof. I don't even know if I could talk about them.
The one that you can.
You know, honestly, I would say, and I haven't even thought about this, but sure, I would probably say it was when I promoted to deputy chief just a few months ago, because we had my final shift dinner and all that stuff, and the guys did all kinds of stuff. It was wonderful. It was amazing. And they gave me a letter, you know, a really heartfelt letter. Man, it was awesome. Like, just, you know, talking about, you know, how happy they were and how heartfelt it was amazing, you know. They don't know it, but you know, they're because you know, sometimes I've been known to be a little tough, and they're trying to make me cry. It was the whole deal, you know. And they were all pissed off because I didn't cry. They're all
Ah,
looking at me.
here it is,
And
here it is.
but they don't know this, but I was pretty close, you know, it's pretty close to welling up. And it's awesome to know that you influence people in that manner. Like you said, communication, that probably is one of the most memorable to me. Even though they tell you they're happy to work on your shift and all that kind of stuff, you never really know until, I mean, it was a cool letter, and you know, the gifts and all that kind of stuff's cool, but just to know you impacted people that way, it probably makes it my fondest memory that I could talk about.
You could talk
Because
about
we
that.
all know
There's some other
a
ones
lot of
that
the
we probably
stories need
should,
to stay
right?
at that table, you know.
That is pretty cool though. That thank you for sharing that story, right? Because sometimes you do like to, I don't want to say reminded, but it's nice to know that you had an impact, a positive impact or influence on a person or a crew or a battalion or shift, whatever it may be, because it helps you like, well, you know what, I guess what I was doing was the right thing. And I did help people. The leadership challenge, we mentioned his name, Chief DeStefano, here many, many times already today. Leadership challenge allows us to continue the conversation around leadership. We talked about perspective already a few times. It helps us gather new and different perspectives for our emerging leaders in the fire service to tune into on this show to help grow their leadership potential. So, if there's someone else out there, Chief, fire service or not, that you believe would bring on a message to be influential, who would it be?
Honestly, I like to challenge my chief, Justin Grimes,
Your chief.
Cocoa Beach. So he's a guy that I started shortly after in the service. Even though he's only got a couple years on me, he and I were partners many, many years ago at my first department
Awesome.
on our engine. And he's one of the ones that came over, and we kind of promoted up through the ranks together. He was just ahead of me. A guy that honestly has been, even though he's a couple years ahead of me, he's been a mentor, right? Kind of guy that always takes the high road. He was instrumental in creating the culture here that we have today. Just a brilliant guy, master of multitasking. He loves to talk, so you'll be a
I got to book 2 hours, what you're saying.
no, but just incredible vision. And I always say, like, he sets the vision, right, for this place,
Awesome.
and then my job is to put all the pieces together and make everything work.
That's pretty
So
cool.
I think he would be great for
That's
this.
cool. I'm trying to think if we've ever had that on the show. Let me think just for a few seconds. If the challenger was, well, we've had one and one, thinking of one and, not yet happened on the show yet. The challenge went out, but not accepted. But yeah, that's pretty cool. It's always humbling and awesome to see because obviously, if you're going to challenge a leader to be on the show and you're saying that you're direct, the fire chief in your department, you're obviously calling out to be, a great leader would share because that's what it's all about, right? This conversation today is about
Absolutely.
sharing the good and the potential and the experiences and the knowledge that these individuals have. So appreciate the challenge. This is Fire Chief Justin Grimes. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. I will, gather contact info from you at a later time and reach out to Chief Grimes to see if he'd be willing to take on Chief Lee's leadership challenge on the kitchen table. So I want to thank you so much again, Chief, for being a guest here on the kitchen table today on episode 70. But before we do close and let you go today, what are your lasting leadership thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with before we close?
Never forget where you come from, who you serve, and why you're here. Right? I think that we're all here for the same reason. It's easy once you get to a chief officer level to start, you know, getting busy with the day-to-day stuff, but never forget the real reason you're here, and that's to serve the citizens, all your paid visitors, and your firefighters. They're the ones who, you know, you're here to support.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today to the Kitchen Table. We truly hope you found this time valuable, and we hope we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Till next time, be safe, be intentional, stay curious.